But this morning, I want to say welcome back to our series on Fixer Upper. In this series, we're talking about real life topics that can help us fix up our fixer uppers. We all need them. And what we're talking about is real life topics that help us build a stronger Christian home. And every home, whether it's Christ-centered or not, if we're going to be honest, needs some fixing up. There's not a home here that doesn't need a little bit of fixing up. When I watch the show Fixer Upper with Chip and Joanna, one of the things that always impresses me is that in the middle of the massive renovation projects that they're on, under the timelines that they have, with all the different people and parts and all this stuff working together, Chip and Joanna always seem to find time to do one thing and to do it together, and that is to rest. They always make time to rest. Now, their rest may be a date night, or it may be when Chip brings all the kiddos by and they do supper with Mom before she has that late night push to put everything in its place. Or in one episode, Joanna surprised Chip with a birthday party at one of the homes they were renovating and gave him a Jeep, and then he about ran over. But the point is, they find time to rest. Actually, they create time to rest. And everybody, every household, every fixer-upper needs rest. I find myself needing rest quite a bit. As I was preparing this sermon, I sat down and started to think through all the different things in our household. And as I go through this, I know this will sound exactly like your household, many of your households. It might be a little different from other households. But I sat down and I started thinking. I was like, okay, we have a household with two teenagers and a preteen who go to school full-time, play football, basketball, baseball, do karate, out of choir. All right. They have friends who stay all night. They have friends who they stay all night with. There are neighborhood kids in and out of our house all the time, and we love it. The other day we pulled in, and there were 10 teen boys in our driveway. We love that. Our grocery bill doesn't love it, but we love it. They're there. Our kids go to youth group. They have youth activities. Then we have two full-time working parents who coach football, basketball, and sometimes baseball, volunteer in the community. Kelly and I both have parents and siblings who live hours away, and we try as much as we can carve out time to go and see them. And they carve out time to come see us. They're here today. So we have a church family we love. We try to build relationships here. We serve in different areas here. We have a small group that meets inconsistently at best right now because we all have the same kind of life. We're all busy. And I know that sounds like a lot of your lives. And a lot of you would say, well, that's nothing. I wish that's all I had to do because some of you are really busy. But the point is, no matter what you're doing, we need rest. I don't believe I'm alone in this at all. We all face the same issues, the same problem. We run ourselves to exhaustion. We busy ourselves into denial. We mark our calendars so full, and we wear them as badges of honor. Maybe your calendar looks something like that from time to time. You have so many things going on, you're not sure where you need to be next. We like the activity, but we do need moments of rest. We can busy our lives with good things, like kids and spouse and work and church and friends and parents and studying. But if we don't take time to rest, these things can become a burden. Sometimes we busy ourselves with not so good things to fill a void that's there. Stuff like TV, video games, gossip, surfing the web, binge eating. All these things can become a burden. One of the things I've come to discover about myself is when I'm not getting enough rest. Now, I'm not talking about sleeping. I'm not even talking about going on vacations. I'm not even talking about inactivity, okay? I'm talking about moments of rest, spiritual rest. When I don't get enough rest, I've noticed that I don't represent Jesus very well at all. I don't represent Jesus well to my family, to my friends, to anyone in the community. And I've noticed that when our household is out of balance, and we don't get enough rest. We don't represent Jesus as well either to each other, to other family members, to the community. A lack of rest in our culture is a serious problem. We rush and we rush and we rush and we rush, and life's no fun anymore. It's just busy. It's activity. Instead of submitting to God's expectations, we have a tendency to submit to people's expectations, and we end up living at a pace trying to impress others who really don't care about us. They just care about what we can get done for them. And when we lack rest, there are some serious issues we can encounter, some very physical issues. I know some of you here today, you've experienced that firsthand. Some of you have had ulcers because of a lack of rest. You just don't rest enough. You worry and you have ulcers. Some of you have experienced mental or emotional breakdowns to the point that you couldn't even cry. Tears fled from you. You just couldn't do it. Some of you have experienced anxiety or depression because of a lack of rest. Everyone, every household, every fixer-upper needs rest. Today, we're going to look at how Jesus addressed this very same issue. Jesus, who knew what it was to rest. Jesus, who knew how to work hard. Jesus, who had people begging for his undivided attention. Jesus, who had his personal space invaded over and over again. And in the midst of being the most important person who ever lived, Jesus knew the importance of rest. And in our passage, he is reminding his followers, and he is inviting them to know how important it is for them to find rest. And maybe that's what some of you are here today looking for. Maybe you're looking for rest. So if you have a Bible, I want to invite you to turn to Matthew's Gospel, chapter 11, verse 28. Matthew 11, 28. Jesus spoke these words. He said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Simple words. Jesus was preaching to a crowd of people in Galilee. And in this passage, he extends to them an invitation found only in Matthew's gospel. His invitation was tender. It was intimate. And it resonated with the crowd who was listening to him on this particular day. The crowd of people who would have been wearied under the extreme religiosity of the Pharisees, who would have been weighed down by the rules and regulations of the teachers of the law. This crowd would have been subject of guilt because of the traditions that taught process over people. This crowd would have delighted in hearing these tender, loving words of Jesus that could breathe new life into them. But at the same time, they were probably perplexed by his innovative words. This passage contains three commands. I don't know if you caught them when we read through it. But there's three commands from Jesus that lead to rest. And I want to walk us through those three commands of Jesus this morning so that we can all experience the rest that he desires for us. And so the first is this. The first is come. Jesus says, "Come to me." That's his first command. "Come all, and I will give." Jesus regularly invited people to come to him to meet their needs. Now, you may be here this morning, and Jesus is right now calling you to come to him. But many people resist this call. Well, I can tell you that until you come to him, you will never find the real rest you're looking for. The kind of rest Jesus is talking about is defined as peace, ease, refreshment. This idea of relax means to become loose or less firm, to have a milder manner, to be less stiff. And so the Bible speaks quite highly of rest. It's repeated throughout the Scriptures some 269 times in the Bible. there's a reference to rest, beginning with the creation week. See, God created for 6 days, then he rested. Not because he was tired, but to set the standard for mankind, to be an example for us to follow. God included rest in the top 10 of the over 600 commandments. It was a top 10. It was a requirement for the law. Notice that God said, remember the Sabbath. Remember the rest. It wasn't something new. It had been around since creation. All God's people and their servants and the animals were to have 1 day in 7 to rest. The command to rest was not an excuse to be lazy. Listen, you can't find rest until you find work. Man was working before the fall. Work is not a result of sin. God created us to work, and our work should be worship to him. But in that, we should even find rest. You had to work for 6 days to get to the Sabbath, to the day of rest. But things have changed. Well, not time. We have a Savior. When we come to Jesus, he's the one who gives us rest. That's what he's saying right here in this passage. A day of the week doesn't give us rest. You can take a day off and be inactive. That's not what this is about. Jesus' words are, come to me, and I will give you rest. When we come to Jesus, he will give us rest. And one of the biggest things he'll give us rest from is self-reliance. He'll give us rest from that. When Jesus tells the weary and burdened to come to him, he's telling them they need to stop trying to do everything on their own. Do you ever find yourself trying to do everything under your own strength? Surely not. Yeah, I do. I'm sure you do. We find ourselves staggering around under the weight of the burden of sin and just life, living for ourselves at times. We live for our possessions, for our prominence, for our pleasure. This is why we don't take time to rest. We're afraid that if we take time to rest, we won't get ahead. We won't get it, whatever it is. What is it? Somebody explain it. What is the it that everyone strives for? See, human effort falls far short of the standard God requires. The cross is the place of exchange where what I am is placed on him and what he is given to me. I want to say that again so that if you want this, you can take it with you. The cross is the place of exchange where what I am is placed on him and what he is, Jesus is given to me. My sins are removed and they're placed on him. His rest is imparted to me. I rest on his perfect deeds credited to my account. Many of you know the actor Harrison Ford of the Raiders of the Lost Ark, all that stuff, and Star Wars, that little role he had in Star Wars. But this actor, he's grossed over $2 billion in the movies he's participated in. And he was being interviewed one time, and he made this statement. He said, you know, I've noticed in life you only want what you don't have. And the reporter said, well, what do you not have with all your wealth and your prominence? And his answer was this: peace. I don't have peace. I don't have rest. So here's this man who has all this wealth, all this popularity, the things so many people desire, the things so much of the world chases after, dreams about, the things people pursue at the risk of losing their own family and friends. And what they really desire is not the stuff. What they really desire is what Harrison Ford desires. It's rest. In that rest, you find the peace that you long for. In Jesus Christ, the full penalty has already been paid. You can begin life anew, and you have the page wiped clean. God did not send Jesus to rub our sins in. He sent Jesus to rub them out, to get rid of them. He bore the guilt, and he paid the cost. He paid the penalty. There is nothing left to pay. You can come, and you can find rest in what Jesus has done for you. And that's what some of you are here looking for today. The sense of relief, of burden, is real for all who have come to know Christ. The Bible calls it peace with God. You can come to Him right now and have peace with God by faith. God desires rest for us because it does not come naturally to us. To rest means we have to trust that God will take care of things for us. If you were to sit down and really reflect, could you say that you really trust God to take care of things for you? We have to trust that if we take a day off, the world won't stop turning. It won't. From the very beginning in Genesis 3, when we decided that we would start making all our own decisions, mankind has become more tense and less able to relax, less able to find rest. It was disobedience in the garden that started the whole problem. But obedience now will bring the rest that God desires for us. If one of the definitions of relax is to become less firm, then relaxing our grip on our own lives, careers, families, whatever, and giving them over to God in faith is probably the best way to relax. For the Christian, the ultimate rest is found in Christ. He invites all who are weary, all who are burdened, to come to Him and cast our cares on Him. It's only in Him that we find our complete rest. From the cares of this world, from the sorrows that plague us, and from the need to work to make ourselves acceptable to Him. We no longer observe the Jewish Sabbath because Jesus is our Sabbath. Rest. In Him, we find complete rest from the labors of our self-effort because He alone is holy and righteous. 2 Corinthians 5:21 said, God made Him who had no sin to be sin for us so that in Him we might become the righteousness of God. We can now cease from our spiritual labors and rest in Him, not just one day a week, but every day. The second command Jesus issues is this: Take my yoke. This is a deeper experience than come. Now He's inviting us to take something. When we come to Christ by faith, He gives us rest. When we take His yoke, and then later we'll look at another one, learn from Him, we find rest when we take His yoke. That deeper rest of surrender and obedience is what we long for. The first, when we come to Him, is peace with God. The second, when we take His yoke, is the peace of God that we can have in our lives. I'm fascinated by this word yoke. I tried really hard to have an old ox yoke up here this morning because I wanted you to see that, but it's so hard to find one of those. We drove to Plymouth looking for one from some of our Amish friends, and they didn't have one, but we did meet a really nice guy out there. He talked highly of Wally. Not really. But anyway, the yoke is just such a special, special tool. A yoke is a type of harness that connects two animals, horses, cows, and in Jesus' day it was oxen. Now, this means that the two animals had to work in harmony. They had to work in unison in order to accomplish the task that was before them. Now, one animal is always going to have to surrender to the other. And that's what the yoke does. The stronger animal surrenders. The weaker animal surrenders to the stronger animal. When we take on Jesus' yoke, He's inviting us to surrender to Him. He's the stronger one in that yoke. He's telling us, you don't have to do this alone. I'm the one in the yoke with you. You're not putting a yoke on by yourself. I'm inviting you to step into this with me. So surrender to me. I'm stronger than you are, is what He's saying. In Jesus' day, to take a yoke was to become a disciple. And when we submit to Jesus, we are yoked to Him. The picture Jesus was painting to this crowd was submitting to Him as their teacher. And the people in this crowd, they were already under a yoke. And I bet, if we're going to be honest, some of you here this morning, you find yourselves in a yoke. You're yoked to something. This particular crowd, They carried the yoke of rules and religion. That's what they carried the yoke of. I'm sure many of you here today have grown up, when you were growing up, you grew up in churches where rules and religious ceremony trumped the relationship with Jesus. Maybe it was something simple like a dress code. You had to wear certain things to go to church. Or maybe you were corralled to a certain section of the worship center and you weren't allowed to sit in certain areas. Or maybe you would visit churches and they'd say, well, you're not a member of this church, you can't take communion even though you're a member of the body of Christ. Because we have rules and regulations. But rules and regulations had become the primary way the people in Jesus' day thought they could relate to God. And Jesus is saying, guys, this ain't my yoke. This is not my yoke at all. Instead, Jesus invites them and us to a yoke of relationship, not a yoke of rules and regulations and religious ceremonies, but a yoke of relationship. Jesus said his yoke was easy. That meant it would fit them just right. It would be comfortable. Now, that doesn't mean that Jesus conforms to your lifestyle. It doesn't mean that Jesus conforms to your sin. What it means is that he fits the need you have for him, and then you live under his discipline. What it means is he being the stronger one in the yoke is requiring you to conform to his way of life. I don't know too many fixer-uppers that couldn't learn from that. There's no rest in rules and religion, but there is rest in a relationship with God based on the finished work of Jesus Christ. So I just want to ask you, which yoke have you been under? Have you been under Jesus' yoke, or are you living under man's yoke? Yokes are made for two, not one. We're not meant to go through life living apart from God. His yoke fits well and is lighter than the one we've been pulling all by ourselves. The idea of a yoke is a picture of forward motion, of two connected together. You cannot be yoked to Jesus and go your own way anymore. We follow him and his direction for our life. To be yoked together means that we cooperate with his work. Before we came to him, we were living for this side of eternity. But once you come to know him and are joined to his work, you discover that our lives make an eternal impact. Jesus commands us to come to him, and he commands us to take his yoke, and his final command is this: learn from me. Warren Wiersbe says, the first two commands represent a crisis as we come and yield to Christ, but this step is into a process. As we learn more about him, we find a deeper peace because we trust him more. Can you honestly say that in all the years that you've claimed a relationship with Jesus, that you have truly learned to trust him more? Now, what I mean by that is, does your household look like a household that trusts Jesus more? In your discipline of your children, in your discipline of your finances, in the discipline of your work, in the discipline of your rest, have you trusted God more? Because we can pay a lot of lip service and say, yes, I've grown in my trust of you, God, yet I still go about and I work the way I want to work, and I raise my kids the way I want to raise my kids, and I spend my money the way I want to spend my money, and not realizing it's yours. Have we grown in our trust of God? Are you open to learning more about Jesus? As we go through life, we learn to rest. We learn to live at peace with God. But this process will not start until you come to Jesus and take his yoke. What I find so appealing is that Jesus says, I'm gentle. That's a great word. Gentleness. You know what gentleness is? Gentleness is strength under control. Just go back to that yoke for a moment. Two big oxen. Powerful animals. Pulling a simple plow. Harrowing a fine row. At the hand of a very, very weak person, the farmer. But he has the control. Weak in comparison to physical strength. But that strength under control, that's what gentleness is. Gentleness is strength under control. Gentleness is a strong hand with a soft touch. It's a tender, compassionate approach toward others' weaknesses and others' limitations. A gentle person still speaks truth, sometimes even painful truth, but in doing so guards his tone so the truth can be well received. Then Jesus says, I'm humble in heart. So you know what Jesus is wanting to learn from him? He's wanting us to learn to be gentle in how we do life, and then he wants us to learn to be humble in heart. Those things aren't given. Those are things we learn. Religious people can be some of the most arrogant people, can be some of the most rude people you'll ever meet. Religious people. Because they pride themselves on what they've done, on their accomplishments. They can be self-centered. And all this is descriptive of our enemy. The very things that turn people off from the church are the very opposite of what Jesus is really like. Hurting, lost, weary people were drawn to Jesus because he cared for them and he met their needs. Let me just ask you this. Are hurting, weary, lost people drawn to you? Do you have people who are hurting, lost, and weary coming up to you? Do you put yourselves in positions where they can? And then do they see something about you that they're drawn to you? Just because you accept Jesus doesn't mean that you won't be tired. Doesn't mean you won't be run ragged. Doesn't mean you won't be exhausted from time to time. But what it does mean is that no matter what's going on in your life, you can have rest. Jim Daly describes rest this way. He said, in music, there is an interval of silence called a rest. And to the casual listener, it's nothing more than an absence of sound, an empty space where nothing is happening. But to a musician, the silence between notes is as crucial as the song's rhythm and tempo, as the notes themselves. Far from being void of purpose, the rest is active and helps frame the melody of the song. I want to illustrate this for you this morning. Caitlin helped me out by finding a song that many of you know, but the rest has been removed. So listen to this. And then I want you to listen to something else.
I can only imagine what it will be like when I walk by your side. I can only imagine what my eyes will see when your face is before me. I can only imagine, yeah.
Okay. That is the way a lot of our lives are, aren't they? This is what God desires for our lives.
I can only imagine what it will be like when I walk by your side. I can only imagine what my eyes will see when your face is before me. I can only imagine.
What's the melody of your life? Is it chaotic? Or does it have rest? Has the best rest been removed? Or has it never been there before? Or is it an imperfect melody? Imagine your fixer-upper in perfect melody, experiencing rest.